This is 91.9 KVCR. Good morning. I'm Ken Vincent. On Fridays, we talk with former Press Enterprise columnist Cassie McDuff, longtime Inland Empire journalist and a KVCR contributor for many years. We review the week's big news stories around the Inland Empire. Good morning, Cassie.
Good morning, Ken.
We mentioned it not too long ago that the Riverside County Board of Supervisors needed their fifth member before too long, and Governor Brown has appointed the replacement for the late John Benoit.
Right, and this is V. Manny Perez. He served in the State Assembly for three terms until he was termed out. He actually ran against Benoit in 2014. He didn't make it, but he was then elected to the Coachella City Council. He's a local guy, son of immigrant farm workers. He earned his undergraduate degree at UCR, a master's degree at Harvard. And it's interesting now, it took Governor Brown a little bit longer to fill this vacancy. The last vacancy he filled on the Riverside County Board of Supervisors was when Jeff Stone was elected to the state Senate. It only took about 3 months. This was almost 4.5 months waiting with the board down one member after Benoit's death. That did cause a problem. There was one occasion in April where the board was unable to reach a quorum. In other words, three members. So they just couldn't meet. So this was an appointment that was definitely being waited for.
Yeah, and with the county having very pressing budget problems, they are going to need their fifth member. And Manny Perez, who's well known in the Coachella Valley because he was in the legislature for so long until he was termed out, and then, as you said, he tried to run against Benoit and he was beaten handily. Nevertheless, he is well liked. John Benoit liked him. He was well liked in the legislature. He was appointed to several important committees and was sort of working his way up into the leadership. How does someone who is well-liked and can get along with colleagues going to make their way on the Riverside County Board of Supervisors?
Well, I think he'll probably be accepted the same way Chuck Washington was. The good thing about an appointment like this is that it adds a little bit more diversity. It had been an all-white male Board of Supervisors for quite a number of years. Chuck Washington, when he was appointed, he's an African American, and now, as you say, Perez, a Latino. So it's still an all-male board, but there is a second person of color. Now, Washington, very similarly, as you described, Perez, was well-liked, very well-known in Southwest Riverside County, and he was immediately accepted and became one of the team. Perez says he's going to have a lot of catching up to do to get up to speed on the budget matters, that the very serious budget constraints that the county faces.
Yeah, he'll have a little bit of time to get up to speed on the county budget, and he's got the capability to do so. He did worked on those kinds of things in the legislature. However, Manny Perez is already looking at an opponent. The election's not until next fall of next year in 2018, but the mayor of Palm Desert, Jan Harnick, who is also well-known in the Coachella Valley, she's already said she's going to run against him, and she was already sort of firing. She's a Republican. Manny Perez in the legislature was a Democrat, and she was already firing some sort of partisan pre-campaign shots at him.
Well, it's interesting because it is a nonpartisan office officially. But as you say, there can be partisan overtones. Coachella Valley has voted very conservatively over a number of years. So we'll see how she does.
Yes. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are other people who jump into this race before next year.
And Perez has already said he does plan to run.
Okay. Next. I saw this story on NPR last week, and I glanced at it. It looked kind of complicated, but now you're here to try to explain a little bit more to us, Cassie. Lawsuits filed by families of victims of the December 2nd San Bernardino terror attack have been filed against social media companies, Twitter, Facebook, Google.
Correct. The lawsuit accuses these high-tech companies of knowingly and recklessly providing a platform for the spread of extremist propaganda and being used to recruit new members and to raise funds for ISIS. Similar lawsuits have been filed against social media regarding the Orlando mass shooting and the Paris terrorist attack. The attorneys representing the tech companies say they are immune from these lawsuits and they aren't the publishers of this matter. But Facebook, in an official statement, expressed sympathy for the victims and families and said that it takes down terrorist content as quickly as it's reported. Twitter has said that it has taken down more than 600,000 accounts with questionable type of content. 74% were caught by Twitter's controls. But the attorney who brought these lawsuits said that these tech companies could do more to automatically screen for terrorist messaging, such as catching clone accounts once they take down one account and another similar one pops up. So they just want them to be shut down faster.
These are three of among the biggest companies in the country, a couple of them in the world. And this seems to be a case involving the First Amendment, expression, speech. This would seem to me really hard to do. Is there past case law? Is there anything to measure whether or not this is going to be a really hard-fought case?
Well, the fact that the tech companies raised the issue that they aren't officially publishers of content does lead me to believe that there's a First Amendment issue here. However, they also are saying that they act as quickly as they can because they recognize that social media can be used for the spread of terrorist messaging. In fact, the FBI said the San Bernardino terrorists were consuming what they called poison on the internet. It's hard for me to see how eliminating Twitter and Facebook or even Google is going to stop the spread of this type of content on the internet, because the internet is so much bigger than just a few companies.
If and when indeed it does hit the courts, it's going to go on for a while. So we'll take this up again another time. Finally, the Cal State San Bernardino Faculty Senate voted no confidence in CSUSB President Tomas Morales.
That's right. There was an hour-long meeting before this vote. Morales had quite a few supporters at the meeting, and the vote was 21 to 15 in favor of the no confidence vote. What's going on is a year ago, the Faculty Senate released the results of a survey of more than 700 employees, faculty, and staff that identified widespread dissatisfaction with the mood on campus and Morales's managerial style. They blame him for dividing the campus, creating a toxic environment, faculty fearful to speak up because of potential retribution, and a failure of the administration to include faculty in decision-making. So these are some very serious concerns. Morales said a year ago that he was going to address them, but the leader of the Faculty Senate said they don't believe that adequate progress has been made.
What does a no-confidence vote mean from the Faculty Senate to the administration?
Well, as I said, Morales said he takes it seriously. It's not binding in any way. It doesn't jeopardize his job. In fact, he said he's going to stay on. You know, it certainly doesn't lead to a firing, although it's interesting to note that 5 years ago, just before he came to CSUSB, he had a no-confidence vote as president of the College of Staten Island.
Is there anything that follows this no-confidence vote? What happens next?
Well, as I said, Morales has promised to address all the issues that have been raised. He said he was saddened by the action, but he's not going to let this divisiveness get in the way of the progress that he believes the campus has been making.
Okay. Cassie McDuff, thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
Cassie McDuff is a longtime Inland Empire journalist and a regular Friday morning contributor to 91.9 KVCR. You can hear Cassie's segments at our website, kvcrnews.org. This segment is made possible by the Southern California News Group, publisher of the Press Enterprise, San Bernardino Sun, Inland Valley Daily Bulletin, and other Southern California newspapers.